Tulsa burns on the desert floor like a signal fire.
This is Music is the Drug, the Cowboy Junkies podcast. You'll find us all good podcast outlets, so please subscribe and make sure you never miss a single episode, including our upcoming special on the new album, Songs of the Recollection, out in a couple of weeks. I'm Dave Bowler, and I wrote the biography of Cowboy Junkies, Music is the Drug. Today we're going back to the Trinity session, and to Trinity Revisited as well, and with Michael Timmins and Alan Anton, we'll be looking at their Hymn to a Life on the Road, 200 More Miles. As Mike points out, it's a song that captured the road ahead, as well as the road behind them, as far as their musical inspirations were concerned.
I mean, that song really, it's basically about, you know, when we released White Sabbath Now, our first record, you know, we did a lot of touring, and we did a lot of touring through the States, and that's when country music began to enter what we were doing and who we were, and began to sort of inspire us a little bit. We picked up a huge collection of country music or folk music, basically from the Smithsonian, and we were all traveling in the same van, the four of us, and doing a lot of miles and a lot of days off and a lot of canceled gigs. And we were listening to that a lot, and we were meeting people on the road who were giving us music, and we were going through their record collections. And country music was really, you know, again, sort of like blues music was to the instigation of the band. Country music was now was fresh to us. You know, we hadn't really listened to it as kids very much. We listened to a lot of some folk music, but not really the, you know, true country music. And it was inspiring to us. And I was beginning to sort of edge towards writing again. And country music was the way in for me as far as a writer goes, because, you know, it told stories. I like the stories it told. It had a very simple structure. I like its, you know, its use of words and metaphor, and you know, that really appealed to me. So 200 More Miles really was probably one of the first songs I'd written for the band. And it really describes us being on the road. You know, I mean, there's a little, one of the verses is about just traveling in the van and seeing cities come up on the horizon, and the other one's about us spending a couple of days in Nashville and visiting the Country Music Hall of Fame and seeing some artifacts like Patsy Cline's lighter and Hank Williams, you know, hotel stationery with the words of "With I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry" lyrics written on it, and really it's about the idea of just traveling and going forward and not really knowing where you're going, but you know, realizing there's a destiny out there, whatever that destiny would be. And certainly at that time, we had no idea what that would be.
If you were a band like Black Flag, people would call that a manifesto, because it's kind of setting out, this is what we're going to do for the next however many years. I mean, I guess you and Mike knew what being in a band meant because you'd done it. But I suppose you had to sort of get that through to Pete and Margo that, well, we've got to go on the road. We've got to slog through. We've got to play all these dates. This is how we learn to be what we're going to be.
I don't think Pete and Margo really understood any of that because they'd never done it, and they're younger than us. So they just wanted to do it. And when it came along for the ride, basically not knowing, you know, what was going to be involved, was, you know, especially just the daily, you know, sleeping on floors and blah, 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 all that stuff, and traveling, but actually playing as well. You put a lot of effort into traveling to the next town, and, you know, seven people show up at your gig. It gets a little demoralizing after a while, or it can, but for me and Mike anyway, we didn't care. We just wanted to play. It didn't matter how many people were there. But I think maybe for Pete, especially Margo, it might've been a little different that way, but you know, they stuck through it obviously. And they learned what it's about, and you know, it's a lesson. You got to do it.
That was the one thing of Al and I's experience that we were able to impart to Margo and Pete. I mean, Pete certainly at the time was totally into it. He had nothing else to do. He was how old, you know, 20 or something. And sure, it was heaven for him. Margo wasn't so sure about it. You know, she'd sort of kind of fallen into this band and wasn't really sure. You know, she still wasn't at that point, wasn't really sure. This is before Trinity, if she wanted to be a singer, and certainly the lifestyle of being on the road wasn't to her personality at the time. And you know, it still isn't in some ways. and we spent many a dinner before or after shows or days off sort of talking about it and talking about, you know, this is the way we become a band. You know, if we're going to become a band, this is this is the way we know how to do it, and this is the tried and true way. You know, it's baptism under fire. This is the way you do it. You, in all situations, whether it's at that point 50 people in a club, which was huge, or 2 people in a club, which is no more normal, and that's the way you did it, right? And you every show you gave everything you had, and you focused, and you learned how to focus, which is a big part of playing live, and you learn how to deal with the exhaustion. You learn how to deal with all the hiccups that came at you every single show. You know, the one show, I remember in Atlanta, we're doing 2 sets, and after the first set, the sound man came and collected all the microphones and went home. So, you know, those are the sorts of things you learn how to deal with. And that was part of becoming a band, you know, and also you begin to build your own story. You know, you begin to build your own mythology and your own past, your own history, and it's a shared history, and that's part of it, you know. So it's a big part, and that's what 200 More Miles is about, you know.
I think it also is a little bit about your place in the lineage. You know, you're going and looking at the museum in Nashville, you know, and then you're writing your own songs about it, and then others will come down that path later on who have been inspired by yourselves. You know, it's a continually unfolding story.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's like the highway, right? I mean, it never ends, seemingly. And you know, one person passes through, down, and it's followed by the next person, and followed by the next person, and even if you don't know who you're following somebody. We were very aware of who we were following. We weren't necessarily thinking we were gonna make the noise they made, but we were, you know, as I always say, we were music fans before we were musicians. And you know, we had so much respect, and still do, for you know, people who have gone before, and what people have done, and you know, what we've borrowed and stolen and been inspired by. And so that was a big part of that song too. You're right. Like that's part of being a part of popular music, whatever genre you fall in, that's, you know, you are following somebody, and you are building on something. And so that's a part of that song for sure.
Just with Trinity Revisited, you came back to that, and Ryan Adams was the singer. And did that sort of uncover any new elements to it in the musically speaking?
Necessarily musically, I mean, you know, it was great hearing him sing that song. You know, he's got such a great voice, and he is a, you know, he is to that song as well, right? I mean, his story is the same. That, you know, he could identify with that song, so that was kind of cool. And you know, he not only could identify the song, but you know, he was inspired by it, right? He was inspired by the song and by that album, and even he'd seen us as a. He was extremely young, and we were pretty young as well. I think he'd seen us on the very early on the Trinity Session tour, maybe on a White's Up Earth Now tour in Raleigh. And you know, he'd come as an underage kid to the bar and sat in and watched us, because he was inspired by, I guess, that record. And so it was pretty cool. And that, and again, that's going back. That's about the lineage. That's about passing it on. That's about, you know, that the next person down, next person up, you know, get back, next person on the road. So it was kind of cool. I guess brought home that song in a way that, as far as its lyrics were concerned, you know, what it was about following in footsteps.
Perhaps they were following in the footsteps, but where White's Off Earth Now had been rooted in the blues, the country music that they'd heard while touring that record was now making its presence felt.
The inspiration for it was before, as you say, you know, before Trinity Session. So it was just the four of us. But yeah, when we went to record it, we took a lot of the ideas of what we were, or a lot of the the music and the instrumentation that we are hearing in country music and a lot of the sort of classic stuff, whether it be pedal steels and accordions and mandolins, which had sort of fallen out of favor at that point in contemporary music in general, never mind country music. Just never, you didn't hear accordions or even mandolins hardly, unless somebody was, you know, doing a traditional sort of music, even fiddles in a way. And we really love that feel and that the expressiveness of those instruments. And so we added those to Trinity Session, and then that was just those were sort of arrangements that we brought to that album. And then the success of that album allowed us then to bring some of those players on the road with us, and you know, the band grew. And but you know, the story kind of stayed the same. It was still a matter of getting in a van and doing a lot, putting a lot of miles on. So, but it's sort of the same story. You know, it's always the same. I remember sitting in a bus once on tour, and at this point we graduated to a bus, and our manager was with us, and so by this point we graduated to a manager as well. And him asking, you know, he just turned to me and said, this 200 more miles, is it still the same? You know, like, is it still the same story for you? You know, looking out of a bus window. And, you know, I don't remember what I said at the time, but I think I probably said no, because, you know, I was in a bus and I was talking to a manager. But really, truthfully, it is the same. It's still the same now. You know, it's kind of the same. It's the same story. There's always 200 more miles.
Will it be the same story in the future then? With Spotify, YouTube, social media, will musicians still pack up the covered wagons and take the songs out to the people? Alan's not so sure.
If I was starting a band now, I don't know what I'd do. I think I'd get in the station wagon and tour around, but who knows? I don't know what the climate would be. Like, even forget about COVID, just about, you know, how you do that these days is really tough, especially with no radio station, you know, you can call up for support or anything like that. I was talking to someone the other day, this young guy in his 20s who's just putting his first record together. And I was asking him about, you know, what do you do? Do you tour? Said, oh no, like it wasn't just no touring. It was he wasn't even thinking of the idea of getting a band together, because nobody wants to do that, he said. Like, nobody wants to be in a band. That you just want to be in front of your computer and doing your music at home, because it's easy, right? You can record fairly well at home. And he said, you know, that's the excitement for him and his friends, is the creating music part, but you're doing it pretty much by yourself, unless you need, you know, guitar solo or something, and you call somebody up to do that. But the idea of putting a band together and rehearsing and touring seemed, you know, completely off the radar for this guy anyways. And he said, but he's claiming it was the same for a lot of people his age. People think that they can win the lottery in a way by putting stuff out on either YouTube or Spotify and all that stuff. They think something's going to happen somehow, and you know, they're working the social media thing and, you know, bugging their friends to give them hits and the whole thing. And I think that is probably sustaining for a while, you know, when you see, you know, hey, I got 4,000 hits on that song, you know, pretty good, and you keep going, but really it means nothing, and it's not going to make a career, and it's not going to make you money, and, you know, it's not going to get you known. So I have a feeling a lot of these people, like, they do it for a few years and then they just, you know, pack it in because they realize there's nowhere to go with it.
We're packing it in for today. But we'll be back next week to climb another mountain from the Junkies catalogue. Before then, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss a new episode. You can also like it, add reviews, and tell your friends that we're here. That's the only way to get the message out, so we really do appreciate your support. To keep up with the band and to pre-order their new album, Songs of the Recollection, head for cowboyjunkies.com. They're back on the road again too, so you can check for tour dates there as well. If you're a Spotify user, you can also follow our growing playlist. All the details of that and everything else is in the show notes. We'll be back next week. See you then.